begin by apologizing for the end of the last installment. There we had the perfect audio example of sleep deprivation and trivial reminiscence of pop culture bad taste. How soon it degenerated into the trivial and the foolish. Podcast one, it was all about lofty goals, things that are only important to all of humanity. Well, I guess you got to be allowed to slip every once in a while. I bet most folks, though, would have waited at least until podcast 9. Second shot out of the box, I'm whining about Dr. Smith. This is a fictional character worthy of our attention? I don't think so. So I'm just going to apologize now and let's move on. Now that that's out of the way, thank you for tuning in. Here we go again. Radio terms. Thank you for downloading and listening to this third transmission, installment number 3 of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Welcome back. They say familiarity breeds contempt. A friend of mine, long ago when I was in high school, said, no, familiarity breeds children. But getting back to the original phrase, familiarity breeds contempt. Well, I bred a lot of contempt between myself and the first 2 installments, but I'm not going to change them. Obviously, if I'm going to be editing them, and they're the first 2 things that I put up, and they're supposedly my flagship recordings, then I'm going to pay a lot of attention to them, and so I did. And in doing so, came to hate them thoroughly. But at least I'm going to learn from my mistakes. I'm going to move on. I'm going to improve. I'm going to make this the best damn podcast I can. And if it means exhibiting false enthusiasm, I'm not above that. If it means hauling trite, corny phrases out of the air, I'm not above that either. Let me just put it this way. I'll try to exhibit a little more energy and a somewhat better pace. I also had intro and outro music picked out months and months and months ago. But when I started trying to mix it in at the beginning and end of the very first installment, it started becoming that major production number that I told you about in the first podcast. I'll have it in. You know what? I'll have it in on this one. So you've already heard it. Good for me. That was easy. Question for pondering for this installment. And we didn't have a weird thing of the week for the last podcast because I didn't actually happen to see anything. I could just go online and do a search on bizarre items sold, but anybody could do that. You could do that now. Please don't. Well, not unless you're listening to this on an iPod or have it saved to your MP3 player or whatever. Who am I? You can do whatever you want. If you could, though, would you do me a favor? Could you come on down to where I am and reroute all of these trucks? I just saved myself a bleep by not saying it. So one of my favorite devices. I've already gone off on a tangent. I haven't even mentioned this week's topic. You saw me start towards it. I didn't take a running start. Oh, here we go. Now we've got a train coming. It's gonna blow. I had another topic started, and I just pretty much wiped it. It had to do with digital realities, three-dimensional worlds, virtual reality, MMORPGs, that kind of thing. But it didn't seem worth talking about. Not in the context of the third installment of a podcast that supposedly wants to deal with important things. I've already apologized for that Dr. Smith thing, so I'm not going to go into that. But to make up for that, or at least to get back on track, at least to get more into what I'm talking about in the first place, because you're going to find this very surprising. I'm not a talker. I am not a talkative individual. As a matter of fact, I cut out so much dead air when I edit these things. If you were standing here waiting for me to complete a sentence, you would probably want to grab me around the neck with your arm and pull my head off. So I'm not a chatty type. I'm not a talker. And I got to explain something else. The reason the audio quality on these is so poor is because I'm making use of time during the day where I normally have these types of thoughts. That is, walking back and forth or sitting down outside the building where I work during my break times. This happens to be my lunch hour. shouldn't even call it an hour, it's only 45 minutes, but this is what I think of these things. I don't generally have the energy to go into setting up my recording stuff at home when I just want to go into these topics if I'm going to start talking about them. So I do apologize for that, but I'm making use of time during the day that's available to me, and hopefully when I'm the most awake. I know I probably don't sound that way, but so it gets, here we go. Oh, trucks. So here in episode 3 of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, I'm going to give my point of view. My point of view is not on the verge of panic, but it is riding the ragged edge of the pit. I view myself as a pessimist on the outer layer. I view myself as a cranky old scumbag on the outer layer. But the deeper you go, I don't know how true this is for anybody else, but the deeper you go, or at least the deeper I go, in terms of how I view myself, and I don't want this to be a podcast about me, 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 what I feel, because I wouldn't want to listen to that, but I want to know if other people feel this way too. Deeper down, I'm an optimist. Deeper down, I really actually hope that we can expect the best as far as how events in our lives, how events in the world, and how events in human history will turn out. Is it really, is it a ludicrous thing to worry on any level about human history, about the condition of humanity and people all over the world? Is it a ludicrous thing to worry about those things? Probably. No doubt there'll be a dozen or so people out there eventually, if this podcast gets any popularity, who'll be saying, wish I had your problems. If you've got time to worry about the future of humanity and the state of people all over the world, then good for you. Look, I'm not an independently wealthy person. I do work for a living, and I'm not what you'd call rich. Now we can talk about wealth, standards of living, and that kind of thing on another podcast, but I do worry about these things. And I do think about what direction people are heading in particular, as I said in podcast 1, in particular, where my country is headed, or at least where my country may already have arrived. So is anyone else out there also on the edge of the pit, or has already fallen into panic or despair, or is just thrown in the towel and given up? Is anyone else out there a pessimist on the outside but an optimist on the inside? Once again, write in. This is supposed to be a listener-driven podcast, much like many of the others. I understand people don't have a hell of a lot of time, but just to dash off a short email, the shorter the better, if it gets your point across, I'm going to read it. And that address is anim5@anim5.com. So what specifically are you worried about, Adam? I'm worried that when I was in high school, I was a junior going into my senior year in high school. It was 1977 going into 1978. And there were long lines of cars at the gas stations, and states were implementing an odd even license plate system for what cars could get gas when. Is there anyone else out there listening to this that's old enough to remember that? We're not talking about gas rationing as in World War II. We're talking about 1977, 78. Carter was president, and he was coming on the television telling everyone to wear sweaters and turn down their thermostats. You know what? That was better advice than we are at war with evil. And they attack us because they hate our freedom. Excuse me? So it was clearly evident when I was in my late teens. I'll repeat again, I'm 46 now. It was clearly evident when I was in my late teens that the world was running out of energy. It is clearly evident that we're sending kids today that were my age then, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids over there, and they're getting killed. And it's because of oil. And I know that. There are so many other places on Earth where the conditions are horrific, where there are armed factions terrorizing their own country, where the humanitarian conditions are non-existent. There are plenty of other places around the world that we're not sweeping in with armed forces to free them. I could be completely insane about this, but I don't believe there are Iranian or Iraqi or Afghanistan families worrying or thinking or giving a damn about what I do and whether I'm free or not. I think that as I watch all these decades pass, with progress being made in the sciences, leaps and bounds, progress is being made in the sciences like crazy, particularly computer science. But that doesn't threaten anybody's power. That doesn't threaten anybody's financial base. It doesn't threaten financial and political structures, the progress that's been made. Isn't it astounding? Isn't it astounding that in the 60s, we had computerized mainframes that could barely send out a correct telephone bill, and in the late 70s, companies were tracking their inventories with early versions of COBOL. I could be incorrect about this. Anybody that wants to correct me, please, write in. But let's just put it this way. Computer power was relatively primitive in the late 70s. And then by 1991, IBM PCs finally caught up with all the other graphics computers and figured out that people wanted to look at something else besides letters and numbers. And it wasn't actually even IBM. It was independent programmers teaching the entrenched, established idiots the potential of what they had. One group came out with something called Wolfenstein 3D, the first time on an IBM you could actually move around in a three-dimensional environment. Now you can log online along with thousands of other people, run around dressed like an elf, and look at waterfalls that are damn gorgeous. That's in 14 years. Isn't it astounding that no viable replacement of energy, no workable, sustainable alternative to the fossil fuels that are poisoning the air and killing our kids overseas, because that's what we're over there to get. Isn't it astounding that that technology hasn't progressed? Isn't it astounding? Isn't it astounding also that the only places you're hearing this being discussed in depth, the only time this information gets disseminated, and when I say this information, I mean just this topic, just this subject matter, the only time it gets explored in depth is on so-called fringe radio talk shows, which are at worst audio versions of the National Enquirer, and at best serious political discussions, but they occur at 1:30, 2:30, or 3 o'clock in the morning. And their distribution is limited because not a lot of people listen to them. Isn't it also amazing that the only other places you're hearing this being talked about is by the people themselves? And that, of course, would mean dozens of other podcasts that talk about the political situation, the dominance of oil as a source of power, how ridiculous, how foolhardy, how dangerous, how backward, how crippling it is, not just to the people of the United States, but to people all over the world. Now, I can sit here and I can get angry about it, and I can know that the technology to alleviate the situation existed in the late 70s. We had solar power. We had solar panels. They may not have been quite as advanced as they are now, but we had the basic workings of solar panels in the late 70s. It wasn't even new then. I'm going to spread an idea here, and I hope it's spread all over the place. There's a concept out now. Well, it's not out. I mean, it's not recent, but it's someone's trying to get the message out that the solar power available on the moon is 8 times what it is here on Earth, being a combination of on the moon you don't have to worry about a night-day cycle, depending on where you put the panels. You don't have to worry about overcast skies, and you don't have to worry about the amount of energy that's just dispelled and filtered by the atmosphere before it gets to a solar panel. Out on the moon, 8 times what it is here. And I think there's enough clear real estate up there to make use of it. The idea being that you set up, essentially, solar energy farms, making use of the material that's already up there, and sending it back in high energy beams to wherever you want the collectors to be on Earth. That, working in tandem with collecting helium-3 from the regolith on the moon, helium-3 being one of the lighter elements that's been proven to produce energy when collided in fusion reactors, small fusion reactors, safe enough to build inside cities because they don't radiate, they don't produce dirty waste, and if the containment field breaks down, well, it turns into helium-3 gas and you lose your helium-3 gas. Nobody gets hurt, no damage occurs, and the result of the fusion reaction is oxygen and water. The problem is we haven't got it here on Earth. There's billions of metric tons of it up on the moon. How much do you need? According to the professor that proposed the idea, one tanker full, one tanker full of helium-3 would supply the Earth for a year. That's its current power needs. Gee, if only we could get to the moon. Gee, if only we had the technology to beam energy via microwave. Oh, wait, we have it. Oh, wait, we can get to the moon. This technology is old. It's not even breakthrough. This is old. It was available when I was in high school. And we're running around the world spending billions upon billions of dollars to subjugate, bully, and browbeat other countries, standing there waving a flag while we do it. Excuse me. I don't agree with that. I have a problem with that. Does anyone else out there have a problem with that? And then, of course, the subject's going to come up, well, you're living in a dream world. You know, the response from the real world grounded in reality. I'm sitting here in my car in traffic and I'm looking around me and you're just dreaming, Adam. You're a nutcase. The response to that is, who's going to pay for it? I think a more relevant question would be, who's going to pay for it if we don't do it? You think setting up that kind of a technology, that kind of a system, first of all, it's a system whereby you can put a meter on it. It's not like we're talking free energy. The companies that invest the money, or the countries, or the combination of countries and companies that invest the money, can put a meter on it. You can still charge people for it. So the idea that multinational corporations are never going to allow it to happen because they wouldn't be able to become super rich anymore and super powerful and own governments. This is another one of my difficulties. This is one of those things where you think to yourself, all right, what's the next step? What is the next step? What do you do? because you know not that not only is this feasible, it is absolutely vital to do. And you know what? I don't care whether it's solar farms on the moon. I don't care whether it's microwave power. I don't care whether it's helium-3 fusion reactors. I don't care what it is. We spent, $30 billion to develop the atomic bomb during World War II? From what? From theory. From math. And in 30 years, since the so-called energy crisis, when everyone threw up their hands and went running around in circles screaming, we're running out of oil, we're running out of oil, what are we going to do, 30 years ago, in 30 years, no science has developed alternatives. So what do you do? That's the next question. So essentially, I suppose we have two main topics of discussion here on International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. The first being, how do you feel about what's going on in the world, how it affects you? Do you really believe that our police force is in place to protect our freedoms? What happened to the anthrax situation? Very shortly after 9/11, all of a sudden there were all these anthrax attacks, weaponized anthrax in the mail. Where did that go? When did that threat suddenly just disappear? Does it cost less or more to send tanks, jets, and battleships to the other side of the world than to install irradiation equipment in main hubs of the post office that essentially eliminate the possibility that anthrax can be sent? Does it cost less or more to drop billions of dollars worth of bombs on a country on the other side of the world than it does to decide you want to protect your borders, your literal, actual physical state borders between the U.S. and Mexico and the U.S. and Canada? It's too vast, it can't be patrolled. Is it being patrolled at all? So if you feel badly about these things, what do you do? What is your option? What is your alternative? And I'm sorry, this is supposed to be part two of the question. Part two of the question is there actually a democracy in the United States? We keep saying we want to make the world safe for democracy, allow other countries to set up their own democracies. Is there a democracy in this country? And if the answer is yes, then what that essentially means is when I vote out or vote in my state representative, and that state representative goes to Washington, and that state representative represents my views. This isn't the best of all possible worlds, by the way. We're forgetting about lobbyists. Am I being represented? Am I being taxed with representation? Or is our government, are our representatives, is our Congress and our president window dressing? I've said for decades that every time you vote for a new president, you're just voting for a change of sock puppet. And I said it jokingly. Once again, being the pessimist on the outside, but the optimist on the inside. And as I see what's moving forward, and as I begin to have my suspicions about what really happened on 9/11, and as I saw what happened in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, and as I see this mad dash for petroleum, this mad, violent, bullying dash to grab the petroleum happening 30 years after all of the American people knew we had to get off of oil. That was a wonderful quote from Bush the other day, we've got to get off oil. The major oil companies have to invest in alternate energies. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? No, there shouldn't be a tax break. No, there shouldn't be a tax on the windfall profits of the oil company because they should be spending that money on alternate energy. When? And for what reason? Why should they have to? For all intents and purposes, it appears to me, I don't know, does it appear this way to you? It appears to me that they've got the government of the United States in their pocket. Now, if all these world exercises, all these military excursions are in the interests of national security, then I would really like a new definition of what national security means. Does it mean standard of living? Does it mean large sums of money? If you're telling me that if we don't go after these resources, some other country will, and once they get it, then they'll have the power, because literally that's what it is, it's power, it's energy. So am I really represented? The sense of helplessness that you occasionally just have to feel, I think pretty much stems from feeling like a lone voice or a lone private individual that can't really do anything about the situation anymore. If you send a letter stating thoughts like this to your representative or to the president or the White House, then you're just some crank that's got nothing better to do. Or at least it seems that that's the way you'd be treated, particularly since subjects like this and topics like this that deal with not just standards of living, but the survival of people on Earth. Topics like this being relegated to the outer fringes. It's a very apt term, fringe politics, fringe talk radio, fringe publications, and now podcasts. Because you can talk about anything you want on podcasts and not offend any sponsors. Because you're doing it out of your own pocket. Now, if this seems too political and not really much fun to listen to, I agree, and I apologize for that. And it's not this series of installments is not always going to deal with this subject. It's not always going to be such a downer. I am going to get into some more interesting things. I hope I am anyway. I mean, you can't talk about this constantly. You'd literally just shut down. You'd want to turn the PC on and just play a game or something. God forbid, watch the television. But I'd love to hear from other people out there whether they actually believe they're being represented by their government, or whether their government is just window dressing, a dog and pony show to give the people the illusion that they're actually having an effect because they voted somebody in or somebody out. You know, the bullseye is always painted on George Bush's face, but to me, it's kind of like, it's whoever happens to be in office. Because I hardly believe that the president is actually the power behind his administration. I don't know. But it's bothering me a lot. And I'd also, if anybody can help me, if anybody can write in and tell me, I'd also like to know just what it is I can do. Thousands and thousands of people, thousands of people arrived and protested in New York during the National Republican Convention. Those were the people that could make it. Those were the people that were able to show up. And they were angry. And they wanted their voices heard. Unfortunately, included in the voices were some pretty strange variations in interest groups, but there were thousands of people there. And what effect did they have? There could be a protest on Washington. There have been protests. Were there marches on Washington? Do they really have an effect? Do they become a media event that's covered from a certain angle and then forgotten? Is all you're voting for a face? And if you manage to vote somebody in that has a brain and speaks out and actually does represent the people and their best interests, if they manage to talk, if they manage to get their ideas put across in session, what effect does that have? I mean, really, what effect does it have? If it is all a show, it's not a new thing. I think maybe I need an actual lunch hour, not 45. Perhaps it's just as well I've calmed down a bit. No doubt, if you were paying attention, you detected a minor tinge of paranoia in the last rant. Actually, I hope it didn't much sound like a rant, not for the whole thing anyway. but I feel like it's important. It all depends on your point of view, who you are, where you are, and what you have to do to live. What's important to me isn't even going to make the radar of most other people. And there's things that are important to other people that aren't even on my list. Once again, I guess it ties back to the original, podcast and that final question. What's important? What is important? Is it a show? Is it all a dog and pony show? Are politicians, in general, a certain personality type? Are politicians of a specific human disposition that makes them outgoing, outspoken, bold, confident mixers in among the people who make their living by making promises? Is the size of human government something that collapses under its own weight in any form, not just American? When the utter breakdown of the system I think we were all confident was in place to deal with emergencies before Hurricane Katrina, when the system proves itself to be non-existent, when all the money spent, your money, my money, collectively, when all this money spent to set up the agencies whose responsibility it is to minimize loss of life and loss of property, primarily one would hope loss of life, when it all breaks, or worse, when no one in particular can agree on who is to set it in motion and who's running it, and people die. Is the government there and in place in order to act as a buffer? I mean, think about it. I haven't seen any one specific group of people, one person, three people, suffer any consequences for failing in the responsibility. Other than the victims. But once again, the sock puppet, or the face, or the figurehead, the little dangling empty-headed nobody that's paraded around in front of us, that's supposed to talk to us, and doesn't do it very well, currently George Bush, can just hang his head and make a dour face and go about the political breastfeeding of, it's my fault, I take responsibility, I failed you. But what consequences will he suffer? What really is going to befall him personally as a result? And this is not to say that I think he's any more responsible than Brown was. Brown was yet another overprivileged suit, handed a position he was unqualified for because he belonged to a clique of people that don't even live on the same friggin' planet as you and I. They are not at home at the gas pump or on the highway or at the bank. They never actually have to go to those places. They do not have to go to those places. They don't carry cash. Someone else drives them. The help. Who among any of those people has suffered or will suffer any real consequences, even if you can single them out as being responsible for failing utterly in one of the worst natural disasters to strike the United States in recent history? So when you're expecting representation for your taxation, if you're expecting a democracy to function as it is supposed to theoretically on paper, I shouldn't say you, I should say me and what I perceive. What I perceive is a sham and a mockery of the theory, because you're not talking to anyone that can be held accountable. The theory is wonderful. The practice seems to be whatever defends finance, trade, capitalism. I don't have anything particularly against capitalism in a free market where people get together, pool their money, form companies that produce goods or services that are better or different or improved and in competition with other companies that are doing the same thing. Once again, it's one of those things that looks great on paper, so long as nobody lies, so long as nobody knows they're putting out a car that can kill you 1 in 10 chances. But that's not what I started to talk about. I started to talk about a crippling and a debilitating of the progress of humanity. That was in podcast one. And I don't think I finished that thought. What I meant to complete about it was, in one lifetime, we went from the flight of Wilbur and Orville Wright to landing on the moon in one lifetime. And the method now, and the method that has been our way of getting energy and power in order to create everything that human beings create, if it isn't handmade, our method of getting energy has been the same primarily for the past 90 years. And though we know it's time to change that, and have known for a long time, and though we've wanted it, and when I say we, I mean the generation that's been aware of the energy crisis for 30 years, know that it's time to change it, why are we helpless to do so? I mean, why hasn't the progress been made, and where do we go from here? Write in, please, tell me, am I helpless? What can I do? What do you believe you can do? If thousands of people protesting have no real effect, what do they need to do? March on Congress? Walk into the Senate? All right, next up, I'm going to play a commercial. Something on a lighter note, because this has gotten me depressed just talking about it. I didn't mean to depress you, I hope I didn't. I just wanted to ask some relevant questions and talk about something that actually is important, that actually is universal. Yet another unanswered question, because that's what International Detective Dragons from Outer Space is all about, unanswered questions. And if you've got suggestions for other topics, I'm going to do them. I'm going to talk about those topics. I just have to hear from you. But I'm going to play a commercial now. It's available, and you may have heard it already if you've gone to that special page that's linked to, called Audio Candies, on the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space website, which I haven't mentioned in a while. It's www.anim5.com/IDDFOS. Hope you enjoy it. We're going to lighten things up a bit. Here you go. Available at Walmart, Walgreens, and other fine stores in the metropolitan area. I always wanted to tack that on to the end of that. I think I did once, and then I took it off. Then I put it back on again, then I took it off. I don't know what I was worried about, maybe getting sued, but anyway, yeah, something of a little lighter mood here. Something that also ties into what's going to happen in installment 4. We're going to start talking about words. We're just going to go into the concept of language and words. that's certainly pretty universal. That's important enough to talk about. It matters to everybody. But to maintain a somewhat lighter mood than you've been listening to for the past, I don't even know how long that's been. Believe me, folks, I don't want to turn this podcast into my personal soapbox. And I really don't. And I also don't want it to be my cathartic experience where I turn everybody that just happens to listen into a universal global confessor. That's not what I'm going for here. So let's keep it light. I just would have felt guilty. For some reason, I would have felt personally guilty for not talking about it at least sooner than I'd expected to. Almost as if, well, you gotta eat your vegetables before you can have dessert. Did that make any sense? I don't know, but also on a lighter note, aside from not wanting to make this my personal soapbox and also not wanting to just gush whatever emotional trauma I may be going through, depending on the subject matter, and I don't go through that many, I'm a little more stable than that. If you listen to the end of installment 2, you'd probably disagree. That whole 60s television producer thing was very, very late at night. And I was at the tail end of a long session of putting scenery together. Anybody would be unstable in that under those conditions. You believe me, don't you? But this is supposed to be fun. I'm supposed to be doing this for fun. And hopefully, you get some kind of enjoyment listening to it. I bet you get more enjoyment if you sent in your comments and questions and suggestions to adam5.com. Flashing sign above my head. Inserts segue. But that's why I started this. I wanted to have fun. Because I was listening to other podcasts. Here comes the truck. I was listening to other podcasts and I was having fun listening to them. They were fun to listen to. They inspired me to start my own. And I've got a few that I've got to thank for that. And I'm going to list them here. I'll start by playing one of their promos. Top of the list. Here you go.
Okay, guys, roll to hit the vampire gazebo. You hit.
Hey, guys, what are you doing? Role playing?
Oh, no, it's that guy.
No, we're not doing anything. We're just watching TV.
Aw, that's too bad, because I brought along my new gaming girlfriend.
Hello, boys. Mind if I max out on charisma?
Whoa! Hey, did you get that hot gaming girlfriend from listening to Gamer the Podcasting?
Yeah, of course!
Gamer the Podcasting does not actually get you a hot gamer girlfriend. What it actually does is give you useful advice on tabletop roleplaying, live-action roleplaying, and all other forms of roleplaying games. Sometimes we talk about other games. We can do whatever we want. It's our own podcast. Visit us on the web at www.gamerthepodcasting.blogspot.com.
That's right, Gamer of the Podcasting. An unusual title. Gamer the Podcasting. These are three fun, fearless individuals who are experts in what they do and what they live. It's LARPing. Live-action role-playing. They know what they're doing. They like it. It's fun, fresh, new to them. And they make it fun, fresh, and new to you, even if you've been doing it for years. Three gold medals to them, one apiece. And they're fun to listen to. Who's another one? Dragon's Landing. Now, they're not subject to... These podcasts aren't subject tie-ins. I mean, I can't do a podcast about gaming. Because I'm nowhere near an expert. I understand the concepts. Specifically, role-playing games. Tabletop role-playing games. I haven't done it in... something like 30 years. But I do understand the concept, I understand something of the mechanics, and I certainly understand the appeal. It was fun when I did it. And it's fun to listen to these two guys talk about it. On Dragon's Landing. Very professional, very expert, very useful information. They know what they're doing. They make it fun, fresh, new. A super pair of guys, and I appreciate the fact that they went into it. Extra Life Radio, absolutely fun to listen to. Most of the time they have something like four or five people together talking, not simultaneously, but sharing whatever subject matter happens to come up, primarily in the tech, game, science fiction, bad movie, comic strip creation, a very wide range of topics, actually, but every one of them gets their treatment. What's their treatment? Well, let's see. If you handed them a suit jacket, they'd tie one sleeve in a knot, paint stripes down one side, polka dot it, hang a kick me sign off the back, and maybe a raccoon tail. Then they'd turn it inside out and pretend as if nothing had happened. I don't know, they may disagree with me, but that's kind of how subjects are handled on Extra Live Radio. Again, extremely fun to listen to. Ghostly Talk, the very first podcast I ever listened to. Doug, Scott L., and Will, they're ghost hunters as a hobby. They take their work very seriously. They don't take themselves seriously. And as a result, you get a very, very fun listen. It's 3 whole hours. And they have guests that they interview. Their guests are very often experts in their field. And if they're not published authors or established authorities, then they're at least a wide-ranging group of people associated with Ghostly Talk all over the country who do their own field investigating, generally on the subject of the paranormal. I always enjoy listening to stuff like that. It's fun to listen to, and they make it fun, once again. You can tell if somebody's enjoying themselves when they're doing something and if they're not. At the very least, you can tell if they're serious when they're talking about something or if they're not. Who else? The Roundtable. You can access that podcast at the House of the Harping Monkey or harpingmonkey.com. Their primary focus is on myth. You can't get much broader than that just for sources of discussion. The thing I would say International Detective Dragons from Outer Space has in common with the Roundtable is I generally would like to steer in the direction of subjects that involve absolutely everybody all over the world, every human being. Unanswered questions that would be equally answerable or interesting to somebody on a Philippine island as well as somebody on a subway in Chicago. Well, the subject of myth and truth as myth not only spans borders, not only involves every culture that exists now, but it spans history. So that's quite a big plateful to even scratch the surface of, and they do it very well. Extremely intelligent conversation, and again, they know when to kid around. They don't take themselves seriously either. They have some fun while they're doing it, and they do make excellent points. So those are a few of my thank yous to other podcasts that are out there, and you can find links to all those podcasts I mentioned, as you may have already discovered, on the homepage of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. And I'm going to give you an easier way to find it if you can tell your friends about this podcast and you want to give them an easier way to get to it. If you simply go to www.anim5.com, just let that index, that homepage open up. That's my main site. That's been up since 1998. You don't need to worry about IDDFOS or /, or anything like that. Just go to www.anim5.com and click on the little yellow dummy. That's a little mouse over button that'll take you to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Why a little yellow dummy? Why not? Hey, it works. Excellent. Excellent stuff. And I'm going to mention two more real quick that I just recently discovered. One's called Beyond Science, and the other is, and I'm going to credit Beyond Science with cluing me in via one of his podcasts to the energy information I was talking about before. I didn't do all that research myself. Once again, it's the people that are putting out this type of media that are putting out actual useful information, not your corporate-owned mass sell-the-cookies-and-soap-suds media. So that's Beyond Science. And another one that I really enjoy is Mysterious Universe. And again, I think I enjoy almost anything if it's done by somebody that has a British accent. As soon as I start hearing a British accent, I just kind of go into a catatonic trance and do nothing but listen to it. Sometimes I don't even know what it's saying. I just listen to the accent. I think a lot of people are like that. But I don't know. I know I am. I think we're going to begin the wrap-up for installment 3 here. Who knows how long that wrap-up's going to take. Just need to touch on a few more things. One of them being topics for discussion. Things that I plan to cover in future podcasts, installments, transmissions, audio offerings, and depending on what kind of feedback I get, your items may or may not be on the list, or not as specific as you'd like, or you'd absolutely hate to hear yet another discussion about topic X. And so certainly let me know that too. What do we want to talk about in the future? Well, as I said, the next installment, International Detective Dragons from Outer Space number 4, is going to get into words, language. I should think that's broad enough. I think that could go practically anywhere. And in subsequent podcasts, maybe some talk about reality, fantasy, the imagination, human perception, and under what circumstances all those things meet. One of the operative phrases for that particular podcast would be the willing suspension of disbelief. Yet another topic for our future episode, virtual worlds, that would cover pretty much everything from VR, virtual reality, to MMORPGs. Subtopics on that would be game addiction, the emotional impact of role play, and I think the implications of a world where more and more of the population get deeper and deeper into digital reality. And in a different podcast, later on down the road, maybe a discussion about opposites, the literal foundation of existence. Just speculations on what turns out to be the ultimate simplicity of that yin and yang symbol, the ultimate simplicity of a zero and a one, and the incomprehensible complexity that can grow out of both. I think that's a good little starting list. There's also, of course, going to be quite a bit of show content covering any of the topics that have been discussed so far or suggested in the very first podcast. And I'll repeat this. It's written on the homepage of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, but I'm going to repeat it here. It doesn't matter when you've downloaded any episodes. Right now, it's the beginning of May 2006. If you've downloaded any of these episodes, and it's February of 07, and you want to comment on any topic that you've heard, please don't feel that you have to just let it go by because, oh well, it's already been discussed. Because it might not have been discussed. Or if it has been discussed, even in depth, we haven't heard from you. So send your thoughts in. I'm looking into the possibility of setting up forums. Right at present, it's a bit too daunting a task because I've taken a look at the user guides. And while it's not beyond me, in terms of the amount of time I'd have to put in, that may have to wait for a bit. If it'll help attract listeners to this podcast, I'll certainly do it like a shot, because there's certainly no harm in creating a sense of community.
and I imagined it would be far more convenient to post topic suggestions on a forum where you can see what everybody else is posting and comment on that than it would be to just email anim5@anim5.com. Though, of course, you're always welcome to do that. So I think that's gonna wrap it up for this installment. I have no idea what the running time on this one is. I never do until I edit all the stuff together. I hope it's close to an hour. I'd like to stick to the neighborhood of 60 minutes. Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. I may go shorter in future podcasts, although I doubt it because I don't seem to possess any conversational breaks. And I may go longer which is a likelihood as I get more listener feedback. We'll see. It's still very new. It'll settle out into something nice. And once it's completely settled, then I'll be able to build the front stoop, paint over the cracks, put in rain gutters, nail on the shutters, and call it home. Thank you for listening to number 3. Also in number 4, I'll explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Until then, best of days.